Wednesday, April 26, 2017, and welcome to episode 200 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom. Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology, and we made it to the big number 200. So today, I thought I would do something a little bit different since we've been doing this so long. We've been doing this about 10 years now, and I'm going to change the format up just a bit, and in just a moment, you're going to hear an interview not really an interview, but it's kind of an overview between myself and Daryl Webster from New Zealand, talking about some of the many updates that have occurred with Office 365 in education over the last 2 or 3 months. If you remember back in January, Daryl was a guest on Tech Talk for Teachers, and we discussed some of the different things that were happening in the educational space related to Office 365. So I thought I would invite Daryl back on the show, and this time we're experimenting a little bit. We actually recorded a video cast. But I'm also going to produce this show as an audio format for the Tech Talk for Teachers audience. There's benefits for both of those formats, so I like to mix it up a little bit. But I'm not going to sign off in the regular way, so if you're interested in any of the links that we talk about, be sure to check out our show notes, and those are available at the eiu.edu/ITC website. So without further delay, we'll go ahead and get into this. And here is our overview of Office 365 updates in education. It's Tuesday, April 25th, 2017. Can you hear me, Daryl?
I sure can. And you know what? It's not.
It's not?
It's not. No, no, that's so yesterday. See, over here, it's Wednesday the 26th.
April 26th. Well, welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom, and I have with me guests today from New Zealand, the other side of the world, and just kidding there, he's always a day ahead of me, it seems like. I can never catch Daryl.
That's right, Tom, yeah. So Daryl, also known as Daryl as a Service, I had a recent legal name change, or maybe a Twitter name change. And yeah, there's been a few jokes made about that. I guess I'm not too scalable as a service, as you might say, but been having a lot of fun online and connecting with people. And I guess Tom and I are doubling up a little bit here. I'm recording something for Regarding Office 365. That's our little publication.
Yep. So we're experimenting a little bit. We're going to do both an audio and a video podcast. I'll let Daryl record the video portion of this. So we're just using a Skype station, trying something a little bit different here on Tech Talk for Teachers. And Daryl was a previous guest back in January, and I wanted to invite him back today for a couple of reasons. It's not even been a full semester, and yet so many things have changed in the world of Office 365. So we want to spend some time today on the show talking about some of the many updates, as well as if we have time near the end of the show, we might speculate on an upcoming event next Tuesday, May 2nd. Microsoft Education is having an event dedicated for education technology, and I'm really curious, you know, what your thoughts might be there, Daryl.
Yeah, my head's so full at the moment. I'm getting my thoughts in order. Yeah, I'm not sure what's going to be happening on that day, but yeah, definitely we'll have some fun talking about that.
So let's back up a little bit. Back in January, and then every month Microsoft releases on their blog some of the updates for the Office 365 products. And since EIU is an Office 365 school, I'm always trying to, if it's an impossible job to do, but trying to at least keep my head above water and find out some of the new updates. And this semester has been particularly fruitful, many beneficial changes, and we'll just kind of go down the list here, Daryl. We've got some notes and things going through, and I'll just turn it over to you. I've not done a lot, but Microsoft Teams is one of those new features that has been turned on or lit up. And can you just give a brief intro on that?
A brief intro? I was fortunate enough to be part of an early beta, so I I knew what was coming, and initially it had been released to business. So just, I guess, to sum up or to give you an overview of what Microsoft Teams is, chat-based communication, and pulling it all, I would say, all the common Office 365 online experience into one wrapper. So think of your Office Online applications, SharePoint for storing documents, if you've started using Planner and tools like that. So rather than having to go out to these different services, Teams brings it all together, and
Yeah,
it's all centered around a chat experience.
I think of it as like an enhanced groups with all of those, whatever you want to call it, a wrapper, or all those different services and things around it. It is, I guess, probably rolled out to everybody. Our IT department is one of those features that exist, but we have to contact our IT department to enable it. Because it's one of those, that's one of the struggles we have with cloud services. The benefit is that they can roll something out overnight. However, in an organization our size, with 10,000, users, that could wreak havoc overnight if you just suddenly turn something on, and especially something like that, a chat communication tool.
Yeah, that is an interesting discussion in itself, isn't it? The keeping up to speed and up to date with what's going on in the cloud. But from an adoption and support perspective, you do need to drip feed some of these things out and communicate properly to your people and your population.
Yeah, for sure. And that's true, with all the other ones. Like I said, that one's on our radar screen. We'll have some time over the summer to to dig a little bit deeper in that, and take advantage of some of that. But right now here at EIU, we're in our last week of the semester. Next week is finals, so it's been a bit crazy around here. So we'll put off some of that testing until summer, or winter in your case,
That's a good idea.
Daryl.
That's a good idea.
Okay, let's go ahead, and if you're ready, you want to jump down to OneNote?
Yeah, that's certainly. Now, as usual, OneNote's leading the charge with a number of things that it releases, making it easier for educators and even within the business space as well, where I work a lot too. But that first item there about Ink Online or Ink and OneNote Online was quite a big deal. Now, who was it? I forget the name of the chap who, I think he's called Tablet Guy or something. I forget. Sorry, dude.
The perfect tablet. Rob
Yes,
Baker, I
the perfect
think.
tablet. Yes. Rob Baker. Yes. Yeah, and he came across some early attempts at switching that on and testing it, and he managed to find it while that window was open. So now it's fully released. It's filling a gap where some devices are purely online based. They don't get to install apps. I think filling a gap there where Chrome kind of devices that did have a touch enabled screen but weren't able to install the OneNote app. Finally, that's sort of closing the gap there so that in a classroom experience you can use Ink.
I
Now, is
was
this going to be useful in your field?
a absolutely. I'm a huge, of course, OneNote fan, and in particular, digital ink fan. And for our particular case, since we use shared classrooms, having browser access to a draw tool is really important, because if you don't own the device that you're signing into, at least in the Windows world, if you every time you sign into a new device, it has to create a profile for you, and that can take some time, just the way that Windows works. So being able to have instant access with that is big. And then the other thing, we do have a touch screen, or essentially smart boards, touch screens in our classrooms. So through that interface and through some of the Windows 10 drivers, we were able to use that to use the touch within OneNote Online. But the big advantage to us, and as you mentioned, I also have a Chromebook, and it does have a touch screen, so that makes that Chromebook much more useful to me, because I'm just kind of a pen and ink type person with the digital inking, and that's always been a limitation. Now, it's not a fluid experience. You kind of get spoiled. I still use the original Surface Pro 1, and that's kind of a Cadillac type experience. And then a lot of our faculty do have the new Surface Pro 4s, but
You know, I'm still using the Surface Pro 1, and it's held up very, very well. And it's just kind of a dream device. You know, once you get spoiled, once you use one.
Yeah, that's right. Now, I know for podcast listeners, you're not seeing what's on screen here, but I do have OneNote Online up. So what has been added is a new tab within the OneNote Online experience. That's the Draw tab, and that gives you access to some of the more common features you would use for inking if you were using the full application. You've got your eraser, pen, and highlighter. You've got a few colors as well. So here I am. I've got my pen out. And I can click on that ink color, and I'll choose orange because it's my favorite. And what you were saying, Tom, was it's not quite fluid, so probably looks even funnier because we're trying to record a few things and my machine is busy.
Yeah, it looks a little bit jagged. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what Rob Baker found was I'm using Chrome here, but what he did find was that it was more fluid within the Edge experience as a browser.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we know that you've got the ability to ink within the browser and push that out to a OneNote. So I believe that it's leveraging those features to give it a better inking experience. So that's quite cool.
Yeah, those are two different use cases though, because Edge essentially just freezes the screen and then you annotate over top of the web page.
Yeah.
Whereas whenever you're inking inside of OneNote, you know, one, if you share your notebook, your OneNote notebook with students, they immediately see, you know, it's like having a whiteboard capturing all those notes and immediately available, and then students can access that on their device or their mobile phone. And that is huge for learning, because, you know, that's the whole reason for note taking, to be able to go back and refer to, you know, something you previously had written down. So it's a big deal, yet alone the ability to annotate. And then I'm using it certainly more and more, and I think more educators are as well. But mixing multiple devices when using OneNote, taking a picture with my mobile phone, waiting for it to sync up, then it syncs to the front of the room on the big projector screen, and now then you can do the inking and annotations there.
You know, if it was a bit more organized, I'd present my iPhone and OneNote off that to share. But of course, we need to keep it balanced. We've got an audio audience as well. I think this is a pretty amazing development. It's one that, as you and I've said, it's been requested for some time. So that's great. Now, the interesting thing about that is a side spin-off, and I guess returning a little back to Teams. Teams presents OneNote within the Teams experience using OneNote Online. So therefore, it has inherited inking capabilities directly into Teams as well. So yeah, it was quite a cool thing to see.
From a classroom perspective though, whenever you say the word team, you know, that there's a lot of culture and things involved with that. And because Microsoft serves such a wide and varied audience, you know, I'm thinking how to use it one way. That's probably a case that they never thought of. But it's good to see, as you said, that they're embedding or linking these things together.
Yeah, you know, and just a side discussion there too. One challenge has been for Microsoft, how are we going to help people to use all these great things and features that we're creating, especially within the online experience? And now that they've got an application that wraps around that, it's actually, you might say, driving adoption and driving usage of more of the great things that they've been putting their effort into.
Yeah.
So another big, big, big piece of news. I remember this request way back when OneNote class notebooks were developed, and that is giving parents and guardians access to their student notebooks. One of those initial use cases for the notebook itself was creating a portfolio that could be shared with the parents and say, look, this is the kind of work that is currently happening. But here we have it. It's arrived.
Yes. Yep, that's as you said, a long requested feature, and it'd be great for the portfolio type work. And just communicating back and forth, and you know, just letting the parents know the type and quality of work, and just keeping those communication channels open.
Yeah, no, this I one of the things about it is that it takes a level of burden off the teacher for communicating back to the parents about the progress of the student's work, because it's always there, it's always available and open. And with this new capability, you can give a parent read access, so they have this link now, and they can go in and check anytime they want, of course using OneNote Online, and just maybe, I mean, it's not so much about have you done your homework, but I think the greater benefits are involving a parent more in the learning process, so that they can see the content that's being delivered. There's not something of a Chinese whispers sense that the student doesn't pass on what is happening in school. Imagine this class, sorry, imagine this discussion at the dinner table, which we often hear in families. So how was your day at school today, Tom?
Didn't do anything today. Can't
You
remember.
didn't do anything today? Hey,
No, did nothing.
I went in and had a look at some of the work that you've been doing in your notebook, and tell me a
busted.
bit about that.
Busted.
Yeah, well, maybe, or rather, it actually helps a parent to have more to dig a little deeper, rather than, yeah, it was an
Well,
okay day.
yeah,
I ate my lunch.
as educators, we're always talking about formative assessment and how powerful that is and getting better over time and, smaller increments. And this is, I don't know if we need to come up with a different term for the parenting and things, formative parenting, I don't know. But yeah, it's going to allow some new possibilities.
Definitely. And so there's something interesting about this. So first of all, one area is it's targeted to the student's notebook. So it's not that the whole class notebook is being shared with a parent. So other parents of other students, they're not sharing work between
Right,
that.
right.
But there is the collaborative space, and I'm interested to hear how that's going to be used. To share the kind of work that you can
Yeah.
with parents as well, because there'll be other students in there that are also working in that space, and is there any permission issues around that,
Yeah,
what
privacy
needs
concerns,
to happen in that sense?
for sure.
Exactly.
And the same thing, whenever we work through some of these issues that technology presents us with, I always kind of go back, well, what happens whenever a parent walks into a regular classroom, a physical classroom? That's kind of what they're
Yeah.
doing here, so.
Yeah, that's true. They're seeing the work on the walls. They're looking around the classroom. They're seeing someone at the first desk that they see is working on something there. Yeah, exactly. Now, around those permissions, they also gave a teacher the ability to divide up the collaborative space. I had a little article a little ways back about how to do this in a few complicated steps. It was something of a OneNote hack. So the scenario is, of course, if you're doing collaborative work in the classroom, that you might divide the students up into small groups, and they go off and do their thing, and each group does their thing. And this is a way of being able to create those groups within the collaborative space, so that there is a level of privacy until they're ready to present their work.
Group work within the collaboration space that only that group sees their group work and not the other groups.
That's right, yeah. So there's various different variations on how you would do that, but that's another great piece of work. And I remember that some of these capabilities were released earlier on, but it was all about working with APIs and coding, and just a lot of things that weren't very accessible to a school that wasn't as well resourced with IT staff or programming capabilities. So it's good that they're now extending those capabilities into the tool and making it simpler for the educator to use.
Okay, you want to go ahead and
So
hit the next one?
yeah, removing students' content from a notebook, I think this is more of a tidy up thing. That sometimes when a student moves to a different class, or wanting to be able to bring that work out and remove it. But it did trigger something in there that I want to know about. I know that they were looking at the whole, how do we archive content? How do we make it easier at the end of the year to take that content and make sure it's accessible for reference. How do students take that content, and if they're leaving school, where do they put it? So a lot of that's manual at the moment. That's something I'd like to follow up on and see what the progress is there. We could knock on a few doors and see about that. Now you've had I think it was the last time we talked about the immersive reader was something we were waiting for.
Two big updates there. Two big updates there. The immersive reader, which is just think of it as a text-to-speech type engine, is available now both in Word Online and OneNote Online. And the Word Online is a big deal because here at our college, of course, students are constantly writing papers, but it is now available just a click away in Word Online underneath the view menu. A student can go into any paper that they have written and store it up to OneDrive, and click on view and say immersive reader and have their paper read back to them in a synthesized voice. And you'll be amazed how many errors that you'll hear that you might not necessarily recognize whenever you're writing. So it just kind of makes your writing flow a little bit. I know I use it all the time whenever I'm writing a blog. It's just nice to have your content read back to you, even though it was developed out of dyslexic research and some accessibility reasons. But with universal design for learning and things, it has an audience for everything. So yeah, Daryl, I'll explain to the audio audience here. Daryl's pulling up Word Online. So anything that he have, he's just gonna copy and paste some text here, paste it into his Word Online and go to the view menu. And it'll take a second for it to sync up.
Do I have to select the text to read it out, or is it just going to?
It'll just put your cursor where you want it to start reading and hit immersive reader. And then, of course, you can right now, I think it just has a selection of male and female voice. And, of course, you can adjust the speed. And I don't know if your audio will come through or not. If you hit the
play. Well, it should do. I'm capturing it.
If you hit the play button down at the bottom, the triangle.
Okay.
I'm not hearing it on my end.
Oh.
So it's reading it, and then it also has the benefit of doing that word tracking, so every word is highlighted. I'm just a big fan of that, and I'm constantly telling, especially our special education department, like, make sure your students know about this, because reading is fundamental for learning, and for any student that has difficulty reading, this is just a marvelous addition. And it's free. It's built right into any of the Office 365 subscriptions out there for Office 365 schools.
Yeah, just clicking around there too. So some of those other options are around the speed of reading too. So you can slow that down, and if you're needing to track a little slower, then that's good too.
And I know a few of my friends are for children's books and things, just sight words and reading. It's helping develop some of those reading skills at an early age.
Oh, brilliant. And it looks like it's just a layer. We call it a modal layer in the tech kind of world that sits just across the top of that Word document. It puts the text into a much more readable format for reading out of the screen rather than the Word document. But it's easy enough to just close it, and we're back to our Word document again.
And once again, that's in browser, so there's no additional add-ins or software to install. That's all, within a browser. So it's kind of like that digital ink we were just talking about, with the drop menu in OneNote. That makes it so easy for schools to roll out. And whenever one of these tools become available, the scalability becomes instant. You provide it to one user, everybody in your organization has access to it.
Yep, and I think you mentioned it earlier, if you're a school where you have to share devices, then it's not a challenge of creating a new profile on that machine and having to roam these sorts of things around. They just log in, it's in the browser, and away they go.
Yep, just log out when you're done.
Nice. Yeah. So into another one of my favorite products, Sway. Now I was just talking to you, Tom, before this, one of my reasons I like Sway is because it allows me to throw together a presentation in literally 10 minutes. Sometimes when I go to my user group, I have to tell them about the news, and I get a little lazy, and I know what to talk about, but I need to throw this thing together. So it looks like Sway's also adding in a few things around accessibility, around being able to record video, rather record audio directly into the Sway. And that's pretty good.
As a podcaster, I appreciate that audio addition. That's something I had written up in User Voice a long time ago, so it's out there.
Right.
So now then, I'm using the term Swaycast instead of podcast.
Oh, okay, that'll work. That'll work. You've been able to add, which is it? What one of those... one of those audio sources that you can just embed into it. I should know this because I use it sometimes.
It's just an additional card to add an audio card. And then you can either just press the record. If you have a mic on your computer, just press record and record live. Or you can actually upload MP3s, which I probably need to go out there and make like a Tech Talk for Teachers Sway and just embed my old MP3s out there. And for teachers, here's the other thing that, many people don't think twice about, is if you have a class and you're wanting them to do presentations, because of the way that Sway is shared, you can have a Sway that's private. You can share a Sway with the world, or you can share a Sway, with another individual or two, three, four individuals for a small group. So that gives the teacher the flexibility, for privacy concerns and things like that. And then, again, I always go back to OneNote. Sways can be embedded within OneNote. So you can, set up your classroom notebook workflow so that a student can, embed their Sway. And then the teacher just is one click away from being able to review the material, make comments, digital ink annotations, or if they like, since OneNote supports audio recording, they can, record an audio comment back to the student, again, for part of this formative feedback.
More and more I see OneNote not just as a content creation and ideation and inking kind of tool, but it's becoming a way to curate lots of different content, having the content alongside the working space.
Yeah, I think of it more as a learning environment now. It's just matured to, in many ways the name has always kind of been a misnomer for what the capabilities are, and it's just expanded so much, and the teaching and learning flows are just becoming easier and easier, and that's providing teachers more power to do all these things that we want to do pedagogically, for this assessment and formative feedback. It's literally so easy to do. I think back to the ways that, we used to do and gather up everybody's papers at the end of class or bring home an armful of digital notebooks, and, right now I can do it from my phone.
Yeah, exactly. The format as well is so helpful to a teacher because the other challenge around cloud tech and around keeping up with Office 365 is, it's another thing I need to learn how to use. Whereas OneNote's so free form that you learn a few skills and you can just take it in all sorts of different directions.
Mm-hmm.
I did remember what that audio source was that you could already embed into Sway into OneNote. SoundCloud,
yeah.
So that's cool in the sense that you could use it from a public perspective and say, here's my podcast, and I can bring that in, and you can leverage both. But you mentioned the point of sometimes it needs to be not public, shared, just with the target audience, and this is where that audio file embedding and recording would be quite useful and helpful. Yeah.
And this is one thing that's going to become more of a concern, but as a technical person, I'm always concerned about how big those file sizes are, when you're going to run out of space, and are there going to be additional charges and storage space. So I'm sure there'll be some tools in the future to help monitor that a little bit better. But some people don't understand the technical, limitations there, I guess.
Now the the good thing about this is if you're using Sway within an education or even within just an Office 365 subscription, those limits for how much you can record and store within Sway and how many features you can add into a Sway are far further extended than if you were accessing it with a regular Microsoft account.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got closed caption there as well. Now, I haven't played with that feature in particular, but again, it's about making the content more accessible, which is certainly a focus on Microsoft trying to include everyone so that they can all benefit from the tools that are available.
Yeah, that one I haven't done, but I think this is correct. It's like a VTF file extension or whatever the closed captioning file extension. But if you've ever closed captioned, that's a tremendous amount of work as well, doing the time codes and all of that. But you just upload that closed caption file and it syncs with your video.
Yeah, I've used Camtasia for some of my recordings, and some of that's quite intuitive within there if you want to create the timings and the recordings. But in terms of typing it out,
it's tedious.
Or at least it is, and letting the estimate to start with and then bringing it in, people have their tricks, but it is worth putting that time in. And you know what? Not just from an accessibility point of view for someone who has, hearing loss, but I think too, having content that you want to share within noisy environments, such as an open office, open plan office, being able to read that content. Yeah.
And then English as a second language is another huge use too.
True. And I think finally there around Sway was this navigation view, which I guess that's when I play it.
There's a little tab. There you go. And then it's like I call it a table of contents. You just have your markers for, I assume it uses each card or each one of your headers, which that's quite nice because now, a Sway, if you're using it for a presentation tool, it's like PowerPoint, I got to go back three slides or something. You have a quick way to navigate. Mm-hmm. You have a quick way to navigate around that.
Yeah, I think one presentation technique too that teachers will be familiar with, others as well, but sometimes to make it more engaging, to make it more interactive, a conversation might spin out from what you're currently talking about. And that might leap forward to three or four topics along the way. Now, you've got a choice there. Do I go with that flow and jump to that section?
Right.
Or do I, nope, hang on, we're going to get to that, so just hold that thought. Now, hold that thought. Doesn't always happen. So it's sometimes good to use a feature like this to go, boom, let's go there. Right, let's get back to what we were talking about beforehand.
Yeah.
It could be dynamic.
And a master teacher recognizes those. Those are what I call just-in-time or on-the-fly teaching. And I just recently had written a blog post. I compared it to, whenever they forge metal, there's a saying, hit while the metal's hot, or hit while the iron's hot. Take advantage of those because that's a formative opportunity there that someone's, one, paying attention, two, they're interested. So, right there's two big... two big blocks to learning and take advantage of those situations.
Yeah, and because we have these tools where we can dynamically update them, if one of your students is on that topic wanting to jump ahead and the rest of the class is like, oh, that sounds interesting, you can, as a teacher, just open up that content right there, make a few notes while you're there.
Or some of the students say, well, that's not interesting.
yeah, exactly. Able to use it as almost like a whiteboard and just jotting those notes in there, then coming back to whatever its capability of capturing that at the time.
And within those capabilities, the OneNote class notebook, again, those are some of those things that we can take advantage of asynchronously. And I call this responsive instructional design. So going back there and addressing that particular student or group of students' interest, it's not, you're respecting the class time out there, because sometimes, you get that hand raised in class and it's like, oh, I want to go down, whatever avenue it is. But then your teacher sense, clicks in. It's like, if I go down that, I'm not going to get to, these other topics out there. You just got to make a judgment call there.
Yeah, that's true. Swings and roundabouts, definitely. So that was my list of updates, but like you said, there was so much more that has been released since. So there's no sense in trying to go through everything, but did you have anything else that comes to mind, Tom?
Those were the big ones, and as we finish up our semester here, we're currently doing a survey of our faculty on technology use and trying to get some input. I always turn my eye to summer and some professional development opportunities, and there's always something new to learn. But I think like a podcast like this is valuable that somebody wants to just pop in for a half hour or so. And just kind of catch up on some of these things. But so much of this is just kind of keeping your ear to the ground and just, as I said, trying to keep up to date. And then you're just going to have to cherry pick and say, okay, I want to know more about audio and sway, and dive in a little bit deeper. There's just too much for any one individual to keep up with all the time.
Yeah, and like some, I guess, complain about that, but I see it, and I've always seen it as an opportunity to lean on a community of people that have their areas of interest. You know stuff, I know stuff. Between us all, we have the answer somewhere. So it's okay to specialize. You don't have to be a generalist in everything. And so, Tom, you go into certain areas of things. I like to have interests in others as well. So be part of that community, and I'm sure you've got that kind of community going on within your institution.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, we're getting up close, I guess,
Great.
to a half hour here. One more thing, I'll just throw it out if you want to make any speculations, because the other thing that caught me by surprise,
Right.
and I do kind of pay attention to Office 365 related news, but as I said earlier in the show, I believe May 2nd, next Tuesday, Microsoft's having a live streaming event, and we don't really know what it's about. Some people are speculating that they're calling it Windows 10 Cloud to possibly introduce a new variant of the operating system to possibly take on the Chromebooks of the world. And I'm sure there's going to be a number of other another announcements and things, but it's been kept under wraps, I think, pretty well.
Learn what's next seems to be the catchphrase.
Yeah,
Just looking it up there.
that's the clue. It's like, okay, so read into that what you want.
So open, so open. So yeah, creators update's out.
Yes.
So we kind of know what's next there. Is there anything around devices that they're looking to release?
Well, my Surface Pro 1 is getting old, and I've been holding off hoping, so I don't know if they'll release a Surface 5 or, builds coming up as well. There's always going to be a new device. It's just whenever you're spending your own, hard-earned money, you want to make sure that, you evaluate the market where we're at, and we're right at a transition point where we're getting ready to go to the next generation.
Yeah, exactly. There have been rumors around what the Surface Pro 5 looks like, and even what the next Surface Book might be. But I don't know if that's going to be the focus really
I don't think it
on
will
this
be.
event. No. Learn what's next. I mean, the thing is about learn there, so I think Microsoft have become much better at keeping secrets on certain projects that they've been working on. So it could be quite a
Well,
complete surprise to us what comes.
with the creators update and things, with the emphasis on 3D, 3D printing's been quiet for a while. AR and VR has been quiet for a while, and with Microsoft HoloLens and supposedly there's going to be some lower cost devices coming out to market, by the end of the year anyway. There might be some AR or VR type news as well, but I think that with regards to like the Chromebooks and some lower cost devices and deployment options, easier manageability. We talked about some of these difficulties with Windows 10 and creating profiles and just being able to rapidly deploy low cost devices. And then I hope that my digital inking's not lost in all this if they start cutting cost.
I don't think it will. I know that thinking in ink has been quite a focus. I know that there's been more effort's been put into OneNote for Windows 10 as an app rather than the desktop. So we're seeing more parity going on there. But I really think this is going to be something new in left field. So it's really hard for me to say, you know, what could be coming out of this. It's one of those well-kept secrets. Lots of speculation out in the media.
Yeah, I'll have it tuned into the live stream. That's about, I think, 8:30 in the morning my time, which is what, your time? Midnight or something? 1 o'clock in the morning?
It'll be early. It'll be early. If it's based in New York, it...
9:30 Eastern time. So what is that for you?
Oh, look, I could grab my World Time Buddy app and figure that one out. It's going to be something like 2 o'clock in the morning. I know. Let's see, 9:30. Ooh, 1 a.m. 1 a.m. New Zealand time.
You'll have to be pretty dedicated.
Maybe I'll get up.
Yeah, have to be pretty dedicated to go do that, so...
Well, I do it sometimes. It turns into something of a... Yeah, well, it's amazing how many people I have met online and made online connections just by being part of an extended audience. So that's one of the benefits I have from joining those sorts of crazy hour events.
Yeah. Okay, well, like I said, we were about a half hour here, so we probably need to wrap this up for this portion of the podcast. And... anything else you want to add before we sign off?
No, there's always something to add, but we can draw the line there.
where can we find you online?
So I am Darrell as a Service. That's DARRELLAAS on Twitter, and most other places as well. Periscoping and doing all sorts of stuff live now.
Okay, and probably the best place to find me is at Tom Grissom on Twitter, so we'll be available there. And then I'm not going to do my usual Tech Talk for Teachers sign-off, but I do want to thank Darrell for coming on and being a guest on this episode and sharing his wealth of knowledge and information with us about all of these upcoming updates and how to possibly try to keep up date with all these happenings in the cloud. So until next time, this is Tom Grissom.
And this is Darrell Webster.
Keep on learning.